The
Rod of Iron Ministries?
Yes.
The Moon family?
I campaigned
at the family business of?
I went to visit a business in Pike County. And it was a meet and greet event, and I believe there were 100 people there. I did not campaign with them. I went to meet other people, and I left. I didn't do an interview. And
they introduced you at the event, a cult leader.
Well, he's the owner of the business.
Everybody, it is Wednesday, July 18th, 2018. Welcome to Raging Chickens Out the Coop podcast. In true measure, it is summertime, so we don't know what day we're going on. This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press, and each week I talk to our capital muckraker in chief, Sean Kitchen, about the good, the bad, and the ugly in state and national politics. On today's show, Trump throws the love to Putin. I'm sure you haven't heard about that. First real collusion arrest takes place as a 29-year-old Russian, Maria Butina, is rounded up for operating as a spy and operative for the Russian Federation. Turns out, along the way, she took a lot of awesome selfies with politicians and conservative leaders, which is great. All I know is it's getting real. A shocking poll reveals that a majority of Democrats want Democrats to be like Bernie Sanders. Russia, Russia, Russia. Turns out, not the winning message. Turns out, I don't know, Ocasio-Cortez has got something going there. The poll shows that 57% of Democrats want Democrats to be more like Bernie Sanders. I just said that, so I'm saying it again. Dianne Feinstein loses big in the California Democratic Party endorsement to Kevin DeLeon. That may just be signaling a major shift to the left by the country's largest Democratic Party. European Union fines Google for nearly $5 billion for using its Android monopoly to force companies to install all its apps. And the U.S. Treasury moves to protect the identities of dark money political groups. How about that? Elections have consequences. And it turns out Douglas Roscoff wrote this piece in Medium last week. And it's just, man, whew. Turns out that the rich are just throwing up their hands on climate change and are actively planning to just leave us all behind. They're asking questions like, how do I control my security forces when money becomes worthless? I kid you not. And a PhD student at the University of Houston leaves teaching position after being outed as a white supremacist. Not outed by Sean Kitchen this time, by the way. Just saying. Oh, Scott Wagner lands on the moon. Or should I say on the moonies? And no, we're not talking about that space rock orbiting around the Earth. While we're away, Scott Wagner visited a gun shop named Tommy Gun Warehouse. It was owned by Justin Moon, whose brothers with that crazy anti-LGBTQ pro-gun cult leader Sean Moon. Oh, you remember that guy was blessing the AR-15s and wore a crown of bullets? Oh, don't worry. It gets better. We're going to get into it deep. Good old Scotty Wagner. He's got all sorts of problems. Then he gets confronted, as you heard in our intro today, gets confronted on why did he visit a gun depot that was run by these nut jobs, right? Cult leaders. And he says, hey, he's just the guy who owned the business. Just a business owner, man. Revolving doors alive and well in Harrisburg. Outgoing state rep Stephen Bloom becomes the latest swamp monster to be taking a job with the Commonwealth Foundation. Oh, the Commonwealth Foundation. Sean looks into how the Pennsylvania GOP is creating their own fake news for the governor's race through townhall.com. Some great stuff on Twitter this week, Sean. White nationalists still working with the state of Pennsylvania Department of Labor and Industry. Just saying. TikTok. And man, I'm feeling like a paper boy after receiving this huge package from Labor Notes just yesterday, I guess. A big stack, 50 copies of Rebuilding Power in Open Shop America. I'll be distributing and organizing all right around the corner, folks. This is a great, great guide from Labor Notes, right? Boop. And today's last call in space news, Elon Musk proves himself to be a spoiled asshat of a man-child. when Thai Navy SEALs reject his submarine, he calls a British diver a pedo without any evidence, of course. He wouldn't take his submarine. Do with that what you will. Elon Musk unmasked as a leading donor to Republican PAC aimed at keeping control of Congress. Yes, the guy who, like, wants to the climate change, solar panel, electric car, give whatever. And the Curiosity rover finds ancient building blocks of life on Mars. And it turns out that NASA may have accidentally destroyed evidence of these same building blocks during a 1976 mission. That was kind of cool. Cool stuff to read. Sean sells his first print. Hoot! And Kevin gets his final proofs for his article, We Are Not In This Together, A Case for Advocacy, Factionalism, and Making the Political Personal. Great collection coming out in the fall, Unruly Rhetorics. And I'm in the section, surprise, surprise, called Civility Wars. And back from vacation, sampling some good New Jersey beers, Cape May Brewing and Double Nickel Brewing top my personal list. Tune in to The Rick Smith Show on Free Speech TV this and every Saturday at 7 p.m. Eastern. You can stream the show live at freespeech.org. You can also tune in on the Dish Network, DirecTV, through the Free Speech TV app on Roku. Want to remind everybody? Oh, yes. We've got another episode of Free Range going to be dropping either later tonight or tomorrow. I'm doing back-to-back recordings on Wednesday. Sean had to move some stuff around. I just got back, and so we're doing a back-to-back recording. If I get them both done today, they'll both be out today. But Colleen and I are basically taking it back. We're going to be talking philosophy, politics. She's going to talk about some of her recipes, some cool organic farms, and people that she's been working with. And who the hell knows where the conversation goes. That's how we roll. That will be dropping soon. And remember, now you can go to freerangepod.com, and that is our main website. We should be live on iTunes and Google Podcasts any day now. We're just waiting for the official confirmation. And if you want a progressive future, we need progressive media. You can help support Pull No Punches' homegrown progressive media today. Become a member of Raging Chicken Press for as little as $5 a month. Simply go to patreon.com/rcpress and choose your membership level. If you're not ready to become a member, no problem. Just go to ragingchickenpress.org and click on the big blue donate button on the right sidebar and make your donation. Because, hey, look, with the 2018 midterm elections right around the corner, we need to make sure to keep the movement in the media and the media in the movement. And the best way to do that, become a member of Raging Chicken by going to patreon.com/rcpress. There you have it. Sean, man, welcome back.
It's been a while. I'm surprised how much shit has happened since then.
Yeah, I gave up. You know, I kept on tagging different articles over the past couple of weeks, since I've been away. I say, oh, this is for the podcast, this is for a podcast. And finally, I realized by the time we get to actually when the podcast is, all the stuff I'm tagging, like at the beginning of stuff, is going to be so, like, it's going to feel like it happened last year. So here we are.
Yeah, here we are.
Yeah. So what do you think about the Trump Putin love fest, man?
Well, I think the Russia story kind of blew up this week. I mean,
I think it got real. I think it did.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not the one. So I'll come in from this angle. I think the Russia story is not the sole issue that Democrats should be focusing on coming up in the upcoming midterms. But, you know, it's definitely a story that should be reported on and should be followed. And yeah, I mean, this thing with the new indictments that came out before Trump's visit to with Putin, and then the Maria Butina story that broke Monday night and happened Tuesday.
It was something, man. I'll tell you. Well, yeah, you and I go back on this all the time about the Russia thing. And I think, you know, we're for the most part kind of on the same page about it, except, you know, I'm always like, you know, I we were saying before we went on the show today, I really think that this is a really important story, but not for the way that the Democratic Party leadership wanted to play it. Right. As the end all be all about Trump collusion. I think this is a much bigger story about kind of this you know, the limits of the institutions that we have, how far the Republican Party has gone, like, off the edge when it comes to governance and kind of like supporting democratic institutions, and just, you know, the emergence of, you know, these kind of strongman kind of mob like politics kind of across the globe. And I think that's really where this is going to be a story, kind of like, you know, kind of when it, you know, looking at it from a historical perspective down the road.
So, I mean, yeah, it shows you that these people, most of the Republican Party, are coalescing around Trump, you know, in the wake of all the stuff that's been going around. I mean, what, like, a lot of, like, what, 80 or 90% of Republicans support Trump with the latest poll that came out. Like, they're coalescing around him. It shows you that there no longer should Democrats be campaigning on trying to get those moderate Republicans to come out and vote for them, like how Clinton did and how people still think the Democrats should act. You know, it's finally our system is finally turning into our ideas versus your ideas, and just let them play out in an election. And that's where I think we should focus on, you know, like, you know, our ideas like Medicare for all, universal health care, or free public higher education, student loan debt reform. Like, those issues are what Democrats should be focusing on, because that's what really majority of Democrats want now, you know, versus their issues, which is like, hey, you guys are supporting fascists.
Right.
And fascist ideologies, and you're coalescing around a strongman. 20 years ago, you were the party that was like against Russia with the Red Scare and everything, and now you are coalescing around Putin, and you're coalescing around people like Duterte, like, who are dictators and who are authoritarian strongmen. I mean, it's like, this is where we're going, and it's. I mean, yeah. I mean, and this election is going to be really important.
Yeah, and I'll tell you, you know, it's we talked again about this a little bit before we went on air today, about that that caller, that woman who called in to what is it, like a C-SPAN call-in show, who was a quote unquote independent, but basically came out and said she was a strong Trump supporter, and she was thanking the Russians for interfering in the elections to prevent Hillary Clinton from taking over our government. I mean, it was so off the rails in my mind. And it just and it spoke to, and I think Sam Cedar had it right, you know, on the Majority Report. He had it right when he said,
"You have, like, these dead enders who support Bush, and there are going to be dead enders who will support Trump till the very end."
Well, right, but even more so is that these are folks who are living literally in a parallel universe, media universe, that is. That and the narratives that come through Fox News and talk radio and these kind of this right wing media apparatus.
And it's Sinclair
you know, Media. Yep. We'd even say that in the show notes. We could, as an aside, that's, you hear that Sinclair Media thing that might get tanked now because of this. But we can talk about that another time. But it's yeah. I mean, all that stuff. The fact that these are critical capacities, right, for a segment of the population, this kind of authoritarian minded population, like, it doesn't matter, right, if what they're saying today flies one, like, 180 degrees from what, like, what they believe last week. They are just take the narrative that's spoon fed, and now they're going to come up with a new rationale without any sense of irony or contradiction.
Yeah, I know, like, this type of stuff, really, like, you would say, like, Lakoff has been writing about this for years, you know, like, with, you have two mindsets out there. You have, like, whatever the, you have two mindsets. You have the conservative and progressive mindset. The progressive is more of that nurturing parent, and the conservative mindset's like that authoritarian strongman mindset. And this is exactly what we're seeing right here. It's like, these Republicans are coalescing around that conservative authoritarian frame, and it's, I mean, nothing is stopping them from doing this. So it's, I mean, it's scary.
It really is, you know. And then
Did you also see that the thing regarding this Maria Butina? Democrats wanted her to appear in front of the House Select Committee, and Nunes tanked that from happening.
I thought she did, though.
No, Democrats wanted to interview her, and she didn't appear.
But she appeared in a closed session, didn't she? I mean, this is what came out last night.
Or Quigley.
What's that?
I thought with Quigley revealed that, like, the Republicans were trying to stonewall because they were high up. She was high up on the list of people that they wanted to bring in front of the Select Committee, and the Republicans stopped that, or Nunes stopped that from happening.
Okay, because I know last night on Maddow, she was reading through the kind of indictment of the charges. Because I guess she's actually going to – Maria Bettina is going to be appearing in court today, right, on Wednesday. And they're kind of reading the charges, and you got the formal kind of indictment or charges, whatever it is, that's put forward. And it's set in there. She was asked a question about whether or not that she needed an interpreter. And her lawyers had said, no, she's answered questions before committees before without it being another problem. And the what they said on the show, what Maddow said, was that that was because she had appeared before in closed session before a subcommittee. But you're saying that's not what happened?
Quigley said that Nunes stopped them from appearing in front of the whole entire committee.
The entire committee. Yeah, I think she disappeared just before Republicans.
Yeah, like she wasn't in front of Democrats. Democrats weren't able to interview her. Right. But also the one of the things I thought was really interesting this past week, the Guccifer stuff with that one congressional candidate, that was reaching out to Guccifer, and now like people are pointing at Costello as being a possible suspect.
This is going to get, I'm telling you.
Now, I can't wait for that name to come out. Who's the person reaching out to Guccifer, and how many more Republicans were doing that? Because I guarantee you there was more than one.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. There's no
like,
doubt about
I mean,
it.
This is going to be, yeah. I mean, there's, I feel like this is, the story is blowing up now. But I also think that the Democrats shouldn't take the eye off the prize, which, you know, is that we need an actual message, an actual platform of ideas to start running in these campaigns. Because in 2020, the Russia story, I don't think will stop Trump.
No, right. And I think that, you know, exactly what you pointed to here is that this is where, you know, you start polling Democrats, and the Russia story is not, like I said, I think it is important as a story long term. Right. I think about almost like from an academic kind of thing to be able to track it. I don't mean that academic is kind of like removed, disinterested in that kind of stuff. But I mean, in terms of like, this is like really significant to understand what's going on here. However, as a campaign thing, you know, what matters here is what we're seeing in these, you know, again, with Dianne Feinstein losing the endorsement of the California Democratic Party. We're seeing kind of, you know, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, her huge victory, and seeing these kind of young folks moving forward. We're seeing in our own state, Summer Lee, right, kind of, you know, making huge gains. We're seeing
Sarah Nimrod, Elizabeth Fiedler featured in the New York Times.
Exactly. I mean, this is actually what it seems that, you know, these poll numbers seem to underscore. They're looking for this kind of more progressive populist kind of candidates to be taking the lead, and not the kind of people that are, you know, institutionalists like Dianne Feinstein.
Yeah, I know. Like, and one of the things did you see about the Crowley story? Where Crowley won't remove himself from the Working Families Party ticket?
Yeah, but there's I don't know about that though. I think that there's some back and forth that was kind of going on that, like, I was reading about that, trying to understand what exactly is going on here, because he says he won't remove himself, but my understanding is there's actually a New York State law that won't allow him to remove himself from that.
Unless he changes his residency to Virginia, which is where his family lives and his kids go to school.
Right. And again, he could do that. Right. I don't know. I think it's getting played up to a little bit too much. I don't think anybody's going to I don't think he's going to win. Right. I don't think he's going to run. He's not actively campaigning on it and that kind of stuff. But, you know, again, maybe I'm wrong being too optimistic here. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think Crowley.
But also it ties up Ocasio-Cortez's finances and prevents her from spreading money around to other progressive candidates, in theory, or it slows that down a little bit.
Right. I just don't know how much of that is overly concerned about what could happen. Right. And, you know, again, I think we saw this during the last presidential election. Right. The Democratic Party with the Sanders supporters and the Clinton supporters. There was this moment where people started getting really paranoid. Paranoid is the wrong word. Right. You started basically saying assigning intention and actual like planning on the side of the on the other side based upon just conjecture. Right. Based upon kind of playing out different kind of scenarios. And look, I do that all the time. Right. Game it out. Got to think about what's going on. But just because it could happen doesn't mean it is happening. Right. And all I'm saying is that we got to keep our eye on the prize here, right? We cannot allow this to get into another kind of like rehash of the last election. Now, having said that, if it comes out, if you can give me evidence that this is actually what Crowley is doing, take the fucker down. I mean, like then it's like all hands on deck, right? Yeah. But I'm saying like the paranoia that creeps in on the left. I mean, I've seen this happen so many times. I can't tell you, can be very, very destructive. Right. And the thing is, and again, maybe I'm so far like in my optimistic mood now because I spent some time at the shore. Right. But look,
I know you're wearing a Hawaiian shirt. Here.
I know, like, man. Dude, I got two more
like
coming
to the Jimmy Buffett concert.
Dude, I'm already I'm not leaving the shore ever.
Margaritaville.
Again, I'm like, screw it, man. I'm going to school. I got these like three different shirts like this now. Now I'm like, I got one with fireworks on it. I'm like, hey, everybody. Seriously. But no, my point being this is that, look, Crowley was not a centrist Democrat, right? I mean, Crowley was leaned liberal, right? He was like a liberal. He was a fairly kind of solid vote when it came to kind of progressive causes. I'll say that, you know, with like, I don't know, like a little haze around that because whatever we want to talk about that. But he was not like Dianne Feinstein, right? I mean, that's we should be saying that. He was, however, part of the apparatus and the power structure of the Democratic Party, right? And that became where the issue is. So I think that, you know, I don't think he's got a personal vendetta. Like, I don't know if you saw Joe Lieberman's, like, I don't know, out of his crypt, I guess, this week. And he's like, he's basically released an op-ed basically saying
fuck Joe Lieberman.
Yeah. I mean, look, Lieberman, if it was Lieberman, that's a whole different story. Because, you know, he's got a track record, number one, and he's just, that guy's an ass. He's been an ass for a long time.
Shitty human being.
Yes, exactly. But I don't think Crowley's that guy, and maybe I'll be wrong. Maybe I'll be proven wrong, and I hope not. But, you know, I think that what we see, Ocasio-Cortez, you know, touring around with Bernie Sanders, supporting other progressive candidates across the country, it's very interesting, so.
Yeah, no, it is. Yeah. I'll leave it at that.
Well, that's cool. Well, I don't know. Did you see any of this stuff this week about, you know, first of all, I was encouraged to see that we're starting to see this anti-corporate stuff starting to creep in, right? The fact that the European Union, as I mentioned at the top, fined Google for $5 billion, right, for abusing monopoly, right?
I thought there's just standard operating procedures here in America.
That's the point, right? I think it has been standard operating procedures. And I think the fact that now we see, I mean, because look, $5 billion is more than you'd ever see out of a U.S. court, right? Yeah. The fact that you see Google has been violating European law, right, by kind of enacting these kind of monopoly here. While, you know, look, we're so far freaking gone right now. And without the kind of having control of the levers of the machine, have not put any brakes. If anything, we just encouraged it with the Supreme Court pick that we kind of expect to happen. You know, that's we didn't even say that in the thing, but whatever. That was kind of cool to see. The other part of concern was on the other side. You see that by contrast, the U.S. Treasury under Trump, right, this past week basically moved to protect dark money political groups. Right. So basically saying that, look, these groups no longer they're not going to have to report who their donors are. And we're even talking about, you know, the 501c3s. Right. So here's let me say this is from Reuters. Right. So the U.S. Treasury said on Monday that it will no longer require certain tax exempt organizations, including politically active nonprofit groups such as the National Rifle Association and Planned Parenthood, to identify their financial donors to U.S. tax authorities. The policy change heralded by conservatives as an advance for free speech maintains donor disclosure requirements for traditional charity groups organized to receive tax-exempt donations such as 501c3s, right? So we're talking about these 501c4s, the ones that have been utilized for kind of dark money purposes, and we know the bulk of that money is on the right. So this is the kind of moves that are happening. So that we, you know, there might be bright lights around the kind of Russia inquiry right now, but this is kind of what is, you know, this is kind of what the right has been wanting, right? The disassemble the administrative state. This is what they're talking about, right? Protect the donors, protect the rich folks, and so on. And so I saw that, and I literally that story comes out, and then I come across this article from Medium, by this guy Douglas Roscoff, right? Who I've read a bunch of his stuff before, and I have to say it was freaking unnerving, right? And it was unnerving in a way that science fiction, dystopic science fiction, is unnerving. Right. And how this stuff plays itself out. But he's basically saying, like, look, these folks, you know, these the super rich, they're actively planning for their ways out.
Oh, no, this is something that, like, we've been talking about for a while, or at least not us personally. But I mean, like, this is not science fiction. Mm-hmm. Like, the way that, like, Rushkoff, I mean, I've read some of his work before.
Yeah.
It's been a while. I don't know if I read it in high school or college, but I mean, I like the stuff that he puts out there. And he pretty much, like, wrote something that was this is not dystopian. I mean, they're planning on having, I mean, we're going to be living in a, is it Mad Max? Was that like the
on Thunderdome?
I'm trying to think, what's the movie that came out a few years ago? I think it's gonna be like a water world Mad Max type of dystopic future that we're living in. And I mean, like, how much of the world's population lives within like 100 miles of the oceans?
Yeah, it's like a huge, it's like a majority.
No. Like over a majority of the world's population lives. I mean, we're going to be seeing mass migration patterns never seen before. It's going to be, I mean, if it goes unchecked, the Delaware River in the Philadelphia area during high tide will be like two or three miles wide. Pretty much flooding all of South Philadelphia, Center City, Northeast, and stuff like that. I mean, like, yep. there's going to be real world consequences happening in Philadelphia and closer to home than people don't, like, realize.
You bet.
I mean, like, this heat wave we just had last week that lasted for, like, 10 days.
Yep.
I mean, like, you know, by 2050, all of Pennsylvania will have summer climates like Central Texas.
Exactly. And, you know, this is where you see, like, on the one hand, you've got the rhetoric of, like, the right wing that's basically, the climate denial and all this. But these folks who have got
it's leading towards a fascist society.
Yes. So listen, let me just so people understand what this is. Like, I want to just go, like, cement this in people's minds. So, Roscoff basically, here's the context, right? He was invited to this, like, private resort to deliver this keynote speech, right? Basically on the future of technology and so on. And he was like, it was a huge paycheck. He's like, it's the biggest paycheck I ever got for coming to speak. And so I'm like, screw it, I'm going. Right? You know, I know this is going to be like whatever. But they wanted to come and, you know, deliver this talk on, like, you know, the keynote for the future of technology, right? So he assumed that, you know, he's, you know, going to give this talk to his people. He prepares his notes and everything. And he goes in, you know, they take him into this room, which he thought was kind of like the green room so he could just prepare, look over his notes before he goes in. It's a small, you know, table that, you know, with some chairs around it, things like this, in a small room. And then five super rich billionaires are ushered into the room, and that's it. That's who he's brought to talk to. These, like, super rich billionaires, right? And so let me hear.
I wonder, like, how that feeling goes. Like, oh shit, like,
what the fuck just happened here, right?
And, like, I'm speaking to these people. This is it.
No, or I, you know, my first thing would go through my mind is like, I'm not going to ever leave here, am I? You know, like, this is it. This is how it ends. Right? So I'm going to give you a little of Roscoff's description of here so you can understand what we're talking about here. So they started asking me questions, and I'm going to quote from it. It says, they started out innocuously enough, these questions. Like, Ethereum or Bitcoin? Like, which one is kind of used? Is quantum computing a real thing? Slowly but surely, however, they edged into their real topics of concern. Which region will be less impacted by the coming climate crisis, New Zealand or Alaska? Is Google really building Ray Kurzweil a home for his brain? And will his consciousness live through the transition? Or will it die and be reborn in a whole new one? And finally, the CEO of a brokerage house explained that he had nearly completed building his own underground bunker system and asked, quote, how do I maintain authority over my security force after the event? Slowly but surely, however, they edge to the real topics of concerns, too. Oh, I said that. Sorry. Then the event. What's the event? The event could be the environmental collapse, social unrest, nuclear explosion, unstoppable virus, Mr. Robot hack that takes everything down. They knew armed guards would be required to protect their compounds from angry mobs. But how would they pay the guards once the money was worthless? The billionaires considered using a special combination of locks on the food supply that only they knew, or making the guards wear disciplinary collars of some kind in return for their survival. Or maybe building robots to serve as guards and workers, if that technology could be developed in time. This is the kind of crap that they're actually talking about.
Yeah, no, this is, and they've been talking about this stuff for years. I mean, people have been writing about this stuff for years. I know, like, they are preparing for a world-changing event. Like, this is, like Terminator,
totally.
Skynet, like, mass catastrophe.
Totally.
Like this all, is the,
yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, all the more reason that you go, again, you go right up to the first things that we talked about in this segment about why we need a different vision for politics, number one. Why
a complete different vision for the future.
Yes. Why it's so important to see the finally getting clamping down on these kind of like uber rich folks, right? And allowing this kind of this free market dogma to be destroyed once and for all, because this is their vision of the future. Now, let's be clear. These are a very small segment of the population. And this is what they're thinking about because they don't want things to change.
And they have a lot of money.
And they have a lot of money, right? So what they're banking on is the fact that they're going to continue to do whatever the hell it is that they're doing and not have to change what they're doing.
And
our job is to change
that. And it shows you how scared they are of mass uprisings due to, like, historic proportions of income inequality.
Right. Exactly.
I mean, like, yeah. I mean, they're like... They're bringing us to like Roman type levels of income inequality, and this is how scared they are that the serfs or the plebes will rise up and, you know, kill them.
That's right. That's exactly it. Off with your head, man. It's like, you know, they fear the
guillotine all over again. Are you like in 1789?
Dude, man, it's like it's the same thing over and over again, right? When you have kind of uncontrolled power, what they fear more than else is the guillotine. Right. I mean, that's what it comes down to. And what they want to prevent is the loss of their head. And that is
an equalizer.
That's it. That is the equalizer. Right. It comes down to it. Right. So, I mean, that's the kind of stuff that, you know, that's what they fear. And, you know, so I want to also be clear, just because these people are saying that doesn't mean that that is the only possible future. Right. But it's giving you a clue that these people who are the biggest climate deniers are the ones who believe in it more than anyone else.
Are they buying in?
Yeah. They bought in a while ago. And what they're doing is buying their time in order to dig their freaking underground bunker systems. I mean, it's so crazy.
Yeah.
So crazy. Anyways, that's crazy. The one thing, just on a lighter note, did you see about the PhD student at University of Houston that was forced out by getting outed as a white supremacist?
I did not.
Well, I was
surprised.
Which
is real.
As the first thing I did is I checked the byline. I said, wait, does Sean know somebody in Houston? No, it was actually, I just have to say, this is an article, this is in Think Progress, where I came across it. Casey Michael put this out. But I love this. This is the first.
This is free speech, okay? We should allow this guy to have his own say because he's doing nothing illegal here. You know, it's free speech, and just let them have their say. Well, I mean, that's the world we live in.
Yeah, and I'm like, big whatever to that one. And I was like, but I want to give Casey Michael some huge props for this, because I just listened to the words. This is the first two paragraphs, right? One morning last April, Cole Jones woke up, his phone buzzing. Text messages and voicemails all told him the same thing: don't come to school today. Jones, a PhD student at the University of Houston's Earth and Atmospheric Sciences Department, took their advice, staying away from campus. And it was probably for the best, seeing as the school grounds had been plastered overnight with a series of flyers from the Houston-based Screwston Anti-Fascist Committee accusing Jones of being a white supremacist. Right? And it turns out there was all these pictures and all this kind of stuff of this guy with some, like, ultra-right-wing groups. And he's just kind of like, they used to invite me out to these things, and I just kind of come sometimes and like hang out with them, and they seem okay. But I don't really associate.
I LARP on the weekends, you know, a Nazi. It's just LARPing. I'm not.
Totally. Like when I posed like before that big banner that said blood and soil, and I had this like a flag mask around my face, and I was giving the finger to the camera. Like, I thought it was just all in good fun. I didn't realize they were actual Nazis. I thought it was just, you know, a game. So There you go. I just thought that would
I love the pictures of this because it's like every single poll has like five or six, like there was no denying this.
No, exactly. And what they did is like, you know, on these flyers. And so this guy said, well, I don't know what you're talking about. And, you know, he's got some pictures with this big tattoo on his shoulder, like, which is
a
like,
pinwheel.
Yeah, it's the Nazi black sun. He's got a tattoo on that. That's not the kind of thing that you're just like, oh, I thought it was just playing a game. No,
yeah,
that's conscious effort. I mean, I didn't even know there was a thing called the Nazi black sun. Right. You got to be in deep before you know what the hell that is. Right. But there you go. So once again, the good work is being done out there in every corner of the country, right? Just thought that would lighten your heart today, Sean.
Yeah, I got a similar story to talk about next segment.
Nice, nice. Well, then let's get to it. All right, so this is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. I want to remind you, like, you want to support progressive media. You want to support Pull No Punches journalism. You want to support the next generations of fight back media. Well, guess what? Become a member of Raging Chicken Press today. All you got to do is go to patreon.com/RC Press. Become a member today for as little as $5 a month. That's what keeps this stuff going, folks. Anyways, we'll be right back after this with our Pennsylvania focus. See you then.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two. On this day in labor history, the year was 1969. That was the day hospital workers in Charleston, South Carolina, won union recognition. The 113-day strike reflected all the broader social issues of the day. Led primarily by black women, the strike at the medical college, Charleston County, and several other hospitals intersected civil rights and racial and gender discrimination on the job. Jewel Charmaine Debnam notes that women like Local 1199B President Mary Moultrie, Naomi Watts, and others were essential to the strike not only as daily participants on the picket line, but also as leaders of the local movement establishment. For months, strikers marched, walked picket lines, clashed with police, and held vigils demanding their right to organize. They defied injunctions and endured hundreds of arrests, nightly curfews, and confrontations with state National Guard. Governor McNair and the hospital boards had initially refused to concede to the workers' demands for union recognition. They claimed workers paid with public funds could not engage in collective bargaining. But the women were steadfast. They pointed to the wage disparities between black and white workers and between male and female workers. They also protested the blatant disrespect and discrimination meted out daily by management. Local longshoremen stood in solidarity with the strikers and threatened a walkout in support if their demands were not met. Coretta Scott King and many other civil rights leaders also played a supportive role. Finally, the union won reinstatement of fired workers, which had touched off the strike. They also won a solid grievance procedure, a minimum wage, and access to a credit union. Victory would be short-lived, however, when the state almost immediately refused to hold up its end of the agreement.
Labor History in Two, brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show.
I'm in a waste management business. Everybody immediately assumes you're mobbed up. It's a stereotype, and it's offensive.
There he is, Senator Soprano himself. Candidate for Governor Scott Wagner. Get no respect. No respect, I say. Welcome back to Raging Chicken's Out the Coop podcast. I am here once again, of course, with Sean Kitchen. And Sean, man, we got lots of Wagner stuff to talk about today.
Yeah, you want to talk about a huge unforced error in the middle of the summer.
Yeah, how about that? How about that? Oh, no.
He's like Bill Buckner through the legs.
Yeah, we just got done with the World Cup and we got the red card is out there, except he did it on himself. All right, so walk us through this story. I mean, this is just kind of like you just can't believe it.
Okay, so Senator Wagner was going through his Why So White town hall tour the past couple weeks.
Why So White?
pretty much like all of rural Pennsylvania. He had town halls in out here in Mechanicsburg. I went to one. He had town halls all throughout rural PA, and he's having one in Philadelphia or the Philly area today, which should be fun. So on one of these like meet and greets town halls, he held it at a place called the Tommy Gun Warehouse up in Pike County. And Tommy Gun Warehouse is owned by people who are part of the Moon family. It's owned by Justin Moon. And Justin Moon is related to Sean Moon. And Sean Moon is the person who has the Rod of Iron cult, the Newfoundland Church, Newfoundland Sanctuary Church up in Pike County. And that is the cult that became pretty famous this past winter for had the invocation of the AR-15s after the Parkland school shooting. If you remember those crazy images of the pastor that wears the crown of bullets.
Yeah, man.
Like, this is who Scott Wagner.
Well, and it's like, you have the pastor with the crown of bullets, and then you've got the pictures of all the people who are attending this, like,
in AR-15, white robes.
White robes with, like,
AR-15s.
Like, bullet, and, like, sashes, right? I mean, across their chests and stuff. It was the weirdest stuff.
This is a really, it's so, like, this cult is literally, like, Sharia law. Anti-LGBTQ. Anti-woman. They believe that women are at the behest of their husband until they die. And if they are not obedient to their husbands, they should be killed.
There you go.
It sounds like Sharia law, doesn't it?
Yeah, it seems like the kind of place, you know, look, just going to go visit them. They're just people, Sean. They're just people. They vote.
So what ended up happening was this church ended up canceling their Sunday services because Justin, this event was at his brother's place, which Justin Moon is a pastor in this church at the Tommy Gun Warehouse. And it was a meet and greet of 100 people. And as the event started, Justin Moon brought his brother up, Sean Moon, to give an invocation saying, blessing Scott Wagner, and saying that he will become the next governor of Pennsylvania. And as this was happening, Scott Wagner said, thank you. You know, I believe 90% of what you believe in. There's some issues we might disagree with, but for the most part, we're on the same page. I'm paraphrasing, but that's pretty much what he said.
No, pretty much. The 98% thing is the key thing, right? I mean, and then, so, you know, if you don't have your prepositions right in that sense, I think we can do the takeaway of the 98% agreement that Wagner
and
said.
And this was called by American Bridge. The George Soros funded group that Wagner attacks all the time. And so
I got to feel that someplace, like, Soros has got to say, like, you know what? I'm sick and tired of being blamed for everything when I haven't done it. So you know what? This time I'm going to do it. This time I'm actually going to go after these assholes and let them feel what it really feels like.
Yeah. And so, so then this immediately becomes a fucking news story because Wagner's campaign attacked Paul Mango's campaign for doing an interview with this guy. And as the story was unraveling, you had people in the Wayne County GOP commissioner, the head of the Wayne County Republicans, was like, yeah, we really appreciate that, you know, the Moon family has this business up here and they're gun owners and all. But, you know, we all, like, know they're crazy. And then they interviewed.
But it's like this is what drives me nuts, right? It's like, look, they're all up here, but we all know they're crazy.
Like, he's like, we stay away from them because we know. He's like, we've written them. We up here have all written these people off as crazy, and we stay away from them. Yes, they are in the business, but yeah, no, we don't deal with them. And then the person working the Wagner campaign and for Pike County who put this together was like, yeah, we didn't realize. Pretty much like he was saying, they didn't realize like this the owner was associated with the family, which is total bullshit because Justin Moon is in the Capitol at all these fucking gun rallies. So like,
your Wagner's like, oh. You're standing right next to the guy with the bullet crown. I didn't know you guys knew each other.
Yeah. And so like, and then, so this happened in Northeastern PA. 2 days later, he had a town hall out in Greensburg, Pennsylvania, which is like southwest of Pittsburgh, pretty much.
Yeah.
And he was confronted by a woman with excellent audio. Again, American Bridge caught this on video. And Wagner was pretty much I have to pull this up because I got like a little bit of a transcript on my thing. So so this is what I wrote. At last night's town hall, a woman confronts Scott Wagner asking, I want to know, why did you lie about campaigning with the Rod and Iron Ministries? Senator Wagner responded with, I went to visit a business in Pike County. It was a meet and greet event, and I believe there were 100 people there, and I did not campaign with them. and said, I went to meet with them with other people. I didn't do an interview and I left. And the lady then goes, but you, he introduced you at the event, a cult leader. And Wagner said, well, he's the owner of the business.
I'm smart enough to, you know, form my own opinions.
That's what he said.
Let's see what's going on here.
I love that. I love the fact that he said that. He's like,
I'm smart enough to, you know, form my own opinions.
So, you know what? I was thinking about when he said that as the response, right? He just says, I'm leaving this as like,
I'm smart enough to, you know, form my own opinions.
Let's just recall just for a second, shall we? Let's do the like big wavy lines and kind of go backwards in time for a second to see what that smart opinion actually is. Like, Scott Wagner is smart enough to form his own opinion. Here's an example of an opinion that he has formed.
The Earth moves closer to the sun every year. We have more people. You know, humans have warm bodies. So is heat coming off? We're just going through a lot of change. But I think we are, as a society, doing the best we can.
There you go. An example of Scott Wagner's.
Do we have the one with the with him speaking on the Senate floor? Or no? We don't have that one.
Wait, this one?
So the workers that are down here in the hallways looking for work, I'd be happy to give them some numbers of employers in York that would probably pay wages somewhere between $12 and $15 an hour. But there are a couple things required. Number one, you would have to have an alarm clock, and you would have to be able to get out of bed. You would be able to have to pass a drug test, and you would have to have some work ethic. I don't go into fast food restaurants every now and then, but maybe I'll stop for a coffee. And periodically, you'll notice somebody behind the counter on a cell phone, either talking on the cell phone or texting, and that's clearly against the company policy. You know, you'll look around, and you know, anywhere you go, there are younger workers with their pants hanging down, rear ends hanging out. They really don't care about their appearance. I don't care if you pay somebody $20 an hour. If they have a certain behavior, it's not going to change their behavior. And this is realism. We have given out so many government benefits over the last 5 years that we have more people riding the wagon than pulling the wagon.
Yeah, is that the kind of thing you're talking about, Sean?
Yeah, that's exactly what I was looking for.
Wait, well, let's not forget this, right? This is probably one of his more famous speeches that he gave recently.
On my challenge, by the ancient laws of combat, we are met at this chosen ground to settle for good and all. Who holds sway over the 5 points? Us natives, born rightwise to this fine land, or the foreign horde, stiff.
There you go, man. But yeah, that, I mean, there you go. I mean, this is what he says.
He's smart enough to formulate his own opinion.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm smart enough to, you know, form my own opinions.
There you go.
I think the best part of that video is like when he like stepped forward to the lady, like took 3 steps, like, no, you're clearly not listening to me.
Yeah. He's like, I'm not a coward. I'm not a coward.
I'm not a coward. So this all happens, right? And so on Friday, he's scheduled to speak at the VFW 100th anniversary event in Pennsylvania, which is at the Hilton Hotel. He released a press release saying he will be there at 12:30 to speak there. He showed up at 12:05, caught everyone off guard, spoke at 12:10, and was gone by 12:15. Like, he literally spent, like, he was running from us. Like, he was running from the trackers, and he was running from people like me with the, like, with the stuff on our website.
Well, you know, he's a little worried.
You're going to the jail.
I
guarantee you what happened, like why he was so scared. I guarantee you the power base, the power brokers of the party who are like pretty much, you know, concentrated in Montgomery County and in Bucks County, like that old guard, wealthy donor class of the Republican Party, probably got on the phone with them like, what the fuck are you doing with this family? Like, not only are you destroying your campaign and it's like not even still the 4th of July weekend, but you're doing it and you're destroying everyone else's down ballot tickets too.
Right.
And, you know, Scott Wagner ain't really doing well in Southeastern PA.
No. So it'll be interesting to see like
there's a lot of scared Republicans, you know, some of those districts down there in Southeastern PA with those Republicans, it's like 70-30, 75-25.
Well, I think he's going to surprise everybody when he has his event down there tonight. I think all his supporters are going to come out, and then all of us, the rest of us are going to be like, oh man, Wagner's going to win.
We were wrong, so we
get right.
But the people that he has surrounded himself with, his brain trust, are a bunch of fucking morons.
Yeah, the brain trust.
Trademark. Yeah, trademark that. TM. Brain trust trademark.
Oh man.
But this was such an unforced error on his part, where like you just gave like countless hours of like television ad space in October and November with this stuff. Like, yeah, you know, he's hanging out with cult leaders. Like, just have like the crown of bullets, like cult leaders. Like, this is like Manson family. This is like Jonestown, like Jim Jones, yeah. Like devil. We're not talking about like, or this, or like, who are the group, like the suicide cult back in the 90s that killed themselves?
Charles Manson stuff, like?
No, the Hail Bob people.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Like, this is like Branch Davidian. This is like, yeah, this is.
I know, this is not hyperbole, folks. Right? This is not.
This is like the type of people that he's hanging out with. And this is how far the Republican politics have gone in Pennsylvania, where we have to cater to, you know, Branch Davidians and Charles Manson type cults.
It's unreal. Well, the thing is that, you know, what makes Wagner's attempt to deny this stuff so disingenuous, like that's the polite word, I guess, like so full of shit, is that because this same crap just played itself out when Barta was up there kind of back in February or something.
Mango.
Right? Mango. Not
Mango did an interview with the guy.
Yeah, Mango sat there and did an interview with the guy, right? And so, and I think that's why Wagner said in that little clip that we heard before, it's like, I didn't do an interview or anything with it, because he knows. He's basically given up the game that he knew who these people were. I didn't do an interview with them like Mango did.
Right? You know? I just shut up on the stage with them. I one-upped them.
Right, exactly.
I took pictures with them. Right, you know exactly. Mango did an interview through like Google Hangouts. You know, where like Wagner's like, fuck it, I'm going to stand next to these people.
Yeah, right. I'll go one better. He went digital. I'm going flesh. You know, it's like, oh man, that's just nuts. That's nuts. So there you go. Oh, Wagner. So I'm looking forward. I have to say, I'm looking forward to seeing this campaign kind of wind up, because like
unravel.
Well, yeah, totally. Well, no, but first it's got to wind up so it just can kind of like, you know, like a spring, it winds up so much and then it just like bursts. That's what I'm looking for. Because look, the guy has got such an anger management problem, right? And he's got so much freaking ego.
Oh, like, he was about to rip that lady. Like, he came within seconds of flipping out on that woman in that. You have to watch the full clip on our website. It, like, the lady, you hear people like, who's paying you, woman?
Yep. Yep. So yeah. There you have it, man. So that's going to be something else to watch as we kind of get into the dog days of summer, except these dogs are barking. So we're going to see. Oh, man. So what's going on with Stephen Bloom, man?
Stephen Bloom is part of like the crazy caucus of Republicans who are not going to be in office anymore. Bloom resigned to run for Congress. In like that district down here in southeastern in south central PA that had like 13 or had like 8 or 9 Republicans running. Mm-hmm. For that, he lost. He is now working at the Commonwealth Foundation.
Surprise, surprise, surprise.
And Bloom is probably like, but he's going to be taking a cushy job with the Commonwealth Foundation as their vice president. And, you know, Bloom is one of the people who have been pushing anti-union bills, pretty much their whole entire agenda. So he's being rewarded with a job at the Commonwealth Foundation.
There you go. This is how it works, folks. This is how it is. And we know the Commonwealth Foundation, just in case is the first time you ever listen to this podcast, is part of the State Policy Network, which is also part of the Koch Network.
And the Scaife Family Foundation.
So just so we don't leave that off the end of the sentence, so everybody knows. Reminder. Crazy. Oh man. What else we got, Sean?
The Pennsylvania GOP is making their own fake news.
That's good.
Yeah. So a lot of the stories that have been lead breaking over the past few days or past couple of weeks coming from the Republicans that they've been sharing on their Twitter account is coming from townhall.com. The person who's creating this stuff is the person who is writing this stuff. She used to work or she was head of the Pennsylvania College Republicans at Penn State and the statewide College Republican Network. Scott Wagner gave them $10,000 last year. She's now writing stories for townhall.com, and she wrote for Campus Reform and that whole entire like network of fake news conspiracy outlets on the right. And this is what they're pretty much feeding this person stories on Wolf and trying to use this as their own like little Breitbart to go after the campaign and all.
Yep, there you go. Keeping it just moving, man. Watch out. Yeah, yeah, you got to keep the gears greased, man. You got to keep the gears greased, you know, especially as we move into the midterms in here.
Yeah.
Sean, what's up, man? We still got white nationalists working in the labor industry, as far as I know.
We do. And this lady actually changed her Facebook profile to a bunch of wind chimes.
That's great. So, I mean, it's interesting. You know, I was thinking about, thinking about this, too, as well. And it's like, again, been away and stuff. I wonder what's happened. And so, look, I mean, I understand how, if you got a position, especially if you're in a kind of government position, I'm sure there's some sort of, whatever process that's got to happen here. But I'm just curious if anybody's going to actually do something about this, right? And how that's going to play itself out. Because the right wing freaking flipped a nut, right? After this, after you publish your story.
That they did. I wouldn't say the right wing flipped a nut. I think a troll flipped a nut. So I wrote this story. This lady's making $181,000 a year. She lives in the West Shore. She works for the Department of Labor and Industry handling disability claims. And she's been working as a state employee for at least like 10 years probably now. She's been making over $120,000 since 2012. So she's pulling in a nice account. She is a self-described white identitarian. Not racist.
White identitarian. Okay.
She's afraid of the downfall of Europe to Muslim and immigrant trash, pretty much. Mm-hmm. This is pretty much what her Twitter account. She has a Gab account, which is used by the alt-right to promote free speech because they all get kicked off of Twitter for being racist and assholes and shit like that.
Yeah.
And, our story pretty much laid it out. I mean, it wasn't like we really had to do much to explain what was going on.
Oh, exactly. Exactly. Here you go. Here's a woman. This is what she says. Her words, not mine.
And I pissed off a couple of people. It got their jock straps in a bunch.
Yeah, it was kind of actually fun to see that play.
We actually did some good fundraising off of that.
We did?
Well, didn't we get someone to become a member and then?
We did. I was actually thinking about, I forgot to mention that at the beginning. We got two new members this month. Thanks to Shanna and thanks to Shireen, who became members. This is freaking awesome.
And we got a bunch of 5-star ratings because of it.
Got a bunch of 5-star ratings, which is a good reminder. Like, one of the ways that, look, if you're not ready to become a member, you don't have that kind of funds that you can kind of support us with. Go to our Facebook page and give us a good rating, right? Listen to our podcast, give us a rating, give comments, kind of right back to that. Join the community, right? Because that's really super helpful, right? That means stuff because, what happens when, these trolls start going nuts is they do everything. They do everything they can to try to disrupt us. I didn't mention this before, but after your story, I don't think it's the first time I've told you, after your story went about 3 days after that, we had about 10 attempts to hack into our site. Right. So that just goes to show you, there's been nothing like that for a while. And then your story comes out, the trolls start going, and then I start getting all these notifications that people try to hack into our site. So this is number one. Also, is a thank you, Seth Goldstein, for helping up our security kind of when he first came on as our tech guy, because that's this is what these folks do, right? They attempt to try to shut you down, but from where I sit, it just kind of was kind of fun to watch it play out, especially on Twitter.
Yeah.
So cool. Yeah, so last thing we got for this segment, one, I was pretty psyched. We mentioned this, I think, last time we were on the podcast, but Labor Notes just produced a new guide, which is called Rebuilding Power in Open Shop America. It's great. It's about, let's see, let me kind of give you the actual page count on this. We're about 24-page pamphlet kind of slash mini guide that basically says, okay, this is how you do organizing, right? Now, Labor Notes, not only being a publication, but Labor Notes holds regional and national conferences, and they also do trainings. And I was in a Labor Notes conference last year, and I got to say, it was some of the most valuable information that I got out actually doing real role play stuff and doing organizing tactics and thinking about building kind of worker power from the ground up, right? This becomes all the more important, especially since you're, here we are in a kind of a post-Janus world. So I decided that I was going to drop a little chunk of change, right, my own personal money, and bought like a big stack of these things, right? You get a little discount, and I'm going to be distributing to you, my labor folks, and kind of actually start talking about how we actually do this on a very local level. And I think, this is a good thing to check out. I've said this before. I've been tweeting about this, for all my brothers and sisters in the labor movement, right, kind of workers across the country, basically we got to be in the organizing mode now. And Labor Notes is a great place to start. Right. They are folks that have consistently butted heads with, some of the kind of more business unionism models of people. They've been all about worker power, grassroots organizing, and building member power from the ground up, not just sitting being told what to do by the leaders, but for the members to begin to organize themselves and make demands of their own leadership. And that's kind of where we want to be. So Rebuilding Power in Open Shop America, it's a Labor Notes guide. Definitely check it out. There'll be a link in the show notes. I really did feel like a paperboy because it came in a big stack with straps on it and stuff like that. It could carry it around and things. I felt like walking to the end of my street and extra, extra, how to organize in Open Shop America, extra. So we'll be looking forward to kind of what we could do with some events there, especially since, I was back in Lytle Hall over in Kutztown University yesterday. And once again, after doing something like a $2 million quote-unquote renovation of a building that should be just destroyed, they're sitting there having to kind of spend several $100,000 more installing a complete new dehumidifier system because all of the renovations they did out there did not solve the problem that they were supposed to solve last summer.
So are they building any more mansions for students to live in on there? On campus?
No, but they're doing, they're investing money in other buildings, kind of that make them all look pretty. And Lytle, as literally, you walk into the first floor of Lytle Hall, and it looks like a Borg mothership, right? All the ceiling tiles are taken off. There's tape down on all the floors. Everything's sealed up, right? And they've got pipes, all running and putting in these these dehumidifier apparatus, but they have to run new conduit and all this kind of stuff in order to make it work. And there was overheard some of the workers were putting the stuff in. Right. And overheard, basically saying OK, well, we got that working, although it looks like we lost the airflow. Right. So in other words, not working. Right. So we'll see where this all ends up. But, the point being is that, I get to these emails all summer long about how this unit, cooling unit has failed this in this building, this cooling unit has failed in this other building. Right. Oh, no. And now it's fixed 3 days later. Oh, we got to do this. So all the money that's going in order to kind of fixing things that were not done right in the first place.
So basically they could have built a new building by this point.
Totally. Totally. Right. And this is how it goes. Right. This is how it goes. So,
it's only Lytle Hall. Who needs the math professors and the English professors?
Exactly. Right. Or the history professors. Right. Yeah. Who needs that stuff? Right. And so this is, one of the things that you learn from what Labor Notes is really good about is these things like building stuff. And, Mike Gambone, who works at Kutztown. Right. He's been our membership chair there for our local lab scuff. This is the kind of stuff that he's been kind of looking at for a while. And I think this is the kind of stuff that we use as organizing opportunities now.
I still think the best thing you guys did was the the wheel.
The stench-o-meter?
Yes, the meter.
The Lytle Hall stench-o-meter, yeah.
Dead cat, dead rat.
Yeah, exactly. What's it smell like? A wet dog to, you know, like Mordor to, you know. That was great. Yeah, and if you actually want to check that out.
Rolling.
Direct action
gets the goods.
Yeah, exactly. And if you want to learn about that, you can actually go to Labor Notes. I actually wrote an article for Labor Notes on exactly that. So you can check that out too as well. But pretty cool, man. Pretty cool. I love the folks at Labor Notes. Shout out to them for producing this awesome guide. And I promise you we'll put it to good use, and we will certainly be in touch. So cool. Anything else happening around town, Sean?
No, that's pretty much it.
All right. Well, I know Sean's got a lot of stuff he's got to get done today, and which is why we moved to Wednesday too as well. So I know I don't want to keep him too long. So we're gonna cut this segment out here and go to the last call. What else can I say? You know, here we are. It's summer. We're doing it. Right. This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. We'll be right back with the last call. This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. For the past 7 years, Raging Chicken Press has brought pull no punches, progressive reporting and commentary to the interwebs. Our long-form investigative pieces, stories that no access journalist wants to touch, or rollicking weekly podcasts strive to advance progressive movements and perspectives rooted in the struggles happening across the country or down the street. We've broken national stories and caused our share of discomfort in the halls of power. If we want a progressive future, we need progressive media. And you can help support Pull No Punches, homegrown progressive media today. Become a member of Raging Chicken Press for as little as $5 a month. Simply go to patreon.com/rcpress and choose your membership level. We need to make sure to keep the movement in the media and the media in the movement. Best way you can do that is to become a member of Raging Chicken today by going to patreon.com/rcpress. Thank you for your energy, your encouragement, and your support. Keep up the fight. Welcome back to Raging Chicken's Out to Coop podcast. It's Les Cole. Yes, everybody. Here we do space news, beer news, and just kind of like stuff that we're kind of cool stuff that's going on around us. I got to start out space news with, you know, Space Boy himself, Elon Musk, this week, you know, proved himself to be just a freaking asshat when it came.
Been saying for years.
Oh my God! Yes, I've been saying it for years. I mean, the guy, as I told you, my wife was always saying, "Like, you realize there's something wrong with that guy, right?" Right? And there is, absolutely. And as he proved himself here, like he got into it this like on Twitter, because okay, you probably saw one of the big stories that was like non like Russia Trump related this week was that there was you know, this Thai soccer team that got trapped in these caves because it was monsoon season. This caves flooded. And so basically they produced this amazing rescue, right? These folks, the Thai Navy SEALs, you had specialists coming in from England who were these specialist divers and things, cave divers, and rescued all the kids. I mean, it was absolutely incredible, right? But, of course, Elon Musk sitting out there, like, in his little mansion, right, probably, you know, thinking about, you know, like, what the kind of next rocket that he's going to produce is going to look like. He basically saw it and said, hey, I know. I'll solve this problem with technology. I'm going to produce my own little submarine. And he did. They went and they took kind of one of the tubes that's used to kind of as, I guess, as part of the boosters, one of the fuel tanks, the side tanks for one of the boosters of one of the rockets. And they turned it into a submarine. They did some test of it and said, we're going to go over and save the day. Right. And these guys, this British diver was like, this is freaking ridiculous. This is like stupid. There's nothing but a PR stunt. The thing won't even work here. He has no idea what he's talking about. So that, of course, prompted Elon Musk to go to Twitter and say that British diver, right, was a pedo. In other words, a pedophile, right? Basically, like, for, you know, just like, where the hell does that come from? Right. You know, like, I always think about it like that. When I hear a comment like that coming from someone like Elon Musk, I mean, like, I don't know, man. This is kind of like a he who smelt it dealt it kind of thing, right? I don't know why you're calling.
Yeah, he's also a communist.
Yeah, right, exactly. Right.
He's self-proclaimed.
Self-proclaimed. Right. Elon Musk, basically, let's recall, is in that group of those people, right? He wasn't in that one I talked about before, but he is looking for the escape plan, man. I mean, let's not forget, like, he's the guy that's going to build our, you know, colonies on Mars, and I guarantee he's going to move if he ever does it. So that was crazy. And then in the same week, right, what we find out that Elon Musk, not only did he prove himself to be kind of like a spoiled little asshat of a man-child, but he also basically came out and basically was unmasked as a leading donor to Republican PAC that was designed, that is their whole task is to make sure that the Republicans maintain control of Congress, right? As a report that came out in Daily Beast. And so you're like, here's this guy. Right. Who has become the hero for some segments kind of progressive or liberals, especially kind of thinking about solar panels and electric cars and all this kind of stuff that, you know, going to help us attack climate change, is basically handing over something like $38,000 donation to this Republican PAC that's designed to do exactly the opposite of what all that stuff is. So here you go, man. Rich people you can never trust. I know you are very happy about this.
Yes, I am. I fucking hate Elon Musk.
Yeah, I know you do. I know you do.
So, yeah, yeah.
So,
no, I'll wait to bring it up after the space stuff because okay. it just popped up on my screen. I forgot to talk about it earlier. I don't want to interrupt you, but it's about Sacha Baron.
Okay.
Okay.
I knew you were laughing about something on Twitter. Wait, let me just blow through the rest of the space news, and then I'll let you loose. The other cool thing, and just in space news the past couple of weeks, Curiosity rover, this was actually really interesting. The Curiosity rover basically came across signs of life, or I should say building blocks of life on Mars, right? So this is from space.com. So if you're holding out, quote, if you're holding out hope that Mars may have once been inhabited world, two new studies should have put a little spring in your step. NASA's Mars Curiosity rover has identified a variety of organic molecules, the carbon-based building blocks of life as we know it, in 3.5 billion-year-old red planet rocks, one of these papers reports. And basically, there's these small building blocks. Now, we should be absolutely clear. This is not something that proves that there may have been life on Mars at one point, but there's been increasing evidence that's coming out that there at one point that there was water on the planet and there that may have allowed for some organic molecules to take form. What was interesting about this story is that at the same time that came out about Curiosity rover studying this stuff, another report came out that in 1976, basically as part of a Mars mission, it turned out that there was actually, they may have encountered the same building blocks before as part of one of the Viking landers that went down to Mars. But the problem was that they would destroy them in the landing of the Viking landers. Because basically what happens, these compounds, these organic compounds or proto building block compounds, when exposed or burned, right, basically because of rocket thrusters, basically it destroys those molecules, right? But then it turns into this other compound, which they actually went back and actually found on the Viking landers or in some of that stuff that they got. So it was just kind of a cool thing. You're 1976 to 2018, you're seeing basically this kind of advancement. It's really kind of cool stuff. The other thing I'll say really quickly, what was I going to say about that? I'll just leave it. But that's just cool stuff going on. Some great photographs that's coming out about water on Mars. The other thing, I will say this. One thing that's actually interesting, there's a report that came out not too long ago that I was just reading through this stuff about looking at the lack of a magnetosphere on Mars as opposed to Earth. Like one of the things that actually protects us on this planet and why this planet is so kind of important is that we have a magnetosphere that kind of like surrounds
a molten
our planet.
Inner iron core,
right? Well, and it actually projects and basically protects us from these molecules, right? These kind of high charged particles that are coming from the sun and all sorts of radiation that protects the planet. Mars has an extraordinarily weak one, right? To the point where that there's no way that these particles are ever going to be stopped, which is one of the kind of studies, some of the science says around that is what has stripped away of any atmosphere and prevents an atmosphere from being formed around Mars. Not that like something crashed in it and ripped it away and can't bring it back. So that raises all sorts of questions about, you know, these desires to terraform the planet and all this other kind of stuff. In the absence of a magnetosphere, there's a real question about whether that'll happen. So it's just kind of interesting, kind of putting all these things together about how these planets, evolve differently. So anyways, that's it for space news. So Sean, so take us to the Twitter sphere.
So the Sacha Baron Cohen aggrievement tour has hit very locally good. Where Jeffy Lord was punked by Sacha Baron Cohen.
No way.
Yes. He's talking about with Mysik. It just popped up browsing around a bit, but that fucking video that Sacha Baron Cohen put out of him.
Tell people what it's about.
Basically, he acts as a Mossad agent going onto Capitol Hill, and he gets a bunch of people to read a script about arming kindergartners with guns. And it was just like this outrageous script. And yeah. It's amazing. Definitely. Did you see the video yet?
Yeah, just you sent it to me. You sent it to me. I checked it out. It was hilarious. Like how like over the top he was in that too.
And it's amazing how he still is able to get away with this stuff. Like,
look, there's a lot of people that are out on that edge that
have no idea who this guy is.
Don't know who he is, and actually are, you know, find what he says plausible because of the world that they operate.
Yeah, and like, he is like the ultimate troll.
I'll say.
But he does it in such a way, like, I still can't believe like how I'm just laughing at that. I have to watch into this, but yeah, there's a video up on Penn Live where Jeffrey Lurie talks about being trolled by Sacha Baron Cohen on Who Is America. So
there you go. Who's America? Now on Showtime. Showtime, right? It's on Showtime?
Yes, on Showtime.
Yeah. Crazy, crazy. All right, let's get to the good stuff, Sean. Man, you sold your first print.
Yes, I did. One of the people who've been supporting our website for a bit, reached out to me over the wintertime after I posted this picture of the waterfront in Harrisburg. In Harrisburg over the winter, we had a really thick ice. The river froze over. Like 8 inches thick sheet of ice spanning the whole entire mile wide river. That's Susquehanna.
Proof that there's no climate change, just saying.
Yeah. And once the ice broke apart in like mid-January, we had an insanely warm 50-degree day where it was like misting. So that was creating like a big fog machine on the riverfront. And I was able to get a picture just as the fog was lifting. You could see the fog going through the one bridge. It was a really great shot. Chris wanted to buy it. He's been asking me for months to buy it. So I finally actually built up the confidence to start like printing my own stuff and selling it. And got a 16x20-inch print of that made, and it came out phenomenal.
Like, it really did.
Yeah. It makes me want to print some more of my stuff and do it like by a 20x30 or a 16x20-inch stuff. Like that's where I feel like you can like get a lot out of a picture, not just like by an 8x10 or 11x17, but like a nice 16x20-inch like poster and mount that and frame it. That's pretty cool being able to do that. And it's awesome having my stuff hang up in someone else's house.
It is, man.
And not just my apartment.
No, right. Well, I don't know where you're going to find the time, though, because, I mean, you do have a lot of porch sitting and day drinking to do, don't you?
Yeah. I think one of the next prints I want to make is the one of the Capitol Dome I took last week.
That's gorgeous.
Yeah. Like, it's just a simple – I was out there. The sun was hitting it the right way. I was waiting for a certain time of the day to hit it. I was looking at it as we were, you know, sitting on Roxbury's deck drinking beer. And so I got my camera out one day where like the clouds were like,
I love it.
Those high level, like clouds were like just going over the Capitol Dome. And it was just the dome right in the center with like the flag, like flowing in the wind. And yeah.
Oh, that sky was like that piercing blue too, as well. I mean, it was, it was beautiful.
Yeah. So actually, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. No. I was going to say, pretty much, yeah. I mean, it was in golden hour, which is like that perfect time, like lighting and everything. And where we could see like where the sun's hitting the dome and how like the one half is like dark and the other half. Yeah. And I put the aperture down to like 8 or 9. So everything was pretty much in focus and it was like nice. All the lines were nice and sharp, the edges of it and all. So it's pretty good.
It's good. Yeah, it is. I'll have to say. I have to say. It's like, you know, follow Sean. I mean, you know, got to follow Sean on Instagram to kind of see some of his shots because it's fantastic.
I'm looking at it right now on my computer screen. It's my backdrop. Yeah. So it looks really good as like on this like 24-inch wide monitor.
There you go. And that can be yours too if the price is right. There you go. You can sell backdrops or whatever, screensavers or whatever the hell we call it, like yeah. themes or whatever. Cool. I got, you know, cool things that we talked about this when we had the our fuck your civility episode, the one where Sean and I were just like had it, right? We were done, right, with this. After, you know, the U.S. government was started kidnapping children and separating from their parents. And as we're kind of see, this still has not been resolved yet.
And let me just say one of these like yeah. civility trolls that was coming after me, yeah. Who is Scott Weiger's consultant. His name's Ray Zaborni. He posted like a really classist, shitty tweet over the weekend that I think like we should all know. Like this guy, Zaborni, is from Red Maverick. He married into a wealthy Republican family. He has this business that's making millions of dollars, getting these assholes elected to office. And
so like, he's part of the brain trust.
Yeah. He's part of Scott Wagner's brain trust. Yeah. Trademark. And so he put this tweet out and very classist and elitist tweet and somewhat uncivil. He said, just saw two women throw down in Costco, period. It was really awesome, period. They really had to be separated. One said, quote, bitch, this isn't over, end quote. I wait for them in the parking lot, but nothing. And someone responded, like, only surprising item in this tweet is that you go to Costco. this is like coming from your, like, West Shore, White Shore type of mentality, brain trust here. And this is the shit we have to deal with out in Harrisburg, where this guy is calling for people for civility. And I screen grabbed a tweet and said, civility, y'all.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Yes.
Exactly.
But thank you for bringing that up because I just wanted to put that out there.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think that, you know, in that episode, one of the things we talked about too as well has been this kind of.
Which we got a lot of great feedback for that episode.
Yeah, we did. We did. It was. We were off the hook, I think, a little bit. I was so mad. And I'll tell you that this
and we kept it civil.
Sort of.
And really, without cursing the whole time.
Not the whole time, at least. But one of the things that, you know, I've been paying attention to for a long period of time. And there's this in 2012. This is how long I was going back over this stuff as I was going through, you know, some revisions of this. In 2012, I was on a panel with our friend Seth Kahn down in Westchester and MJ Braun. And we on this panel at this it was an academic conference, Rhetoric Society of America. And I wrote this piece. It was scathing. Right. And about civility. I was so pissed off about what we were seeing in the wake of what was happening in Wisconsin that these liberals came out right after the capitals had been occupied in Wisconsin and basically started going after the protesters saying that they're being uncivil. Right. And it was like that was 2012. Right. Then we had
nothing has changed.
What's that?
Changed since.
Oh, my God. And so that, you know, so it was about that. And then this has just been what it was interesting going back and looking at that was this what we're seeing right now with Trump. Right. This has been building toward where we are today. Right. Because this has been a dynamic that was going on for a while. So anyways. So I mentioned in that podcast that I had this article that I wrote for this collection. The collection is called Unruly Rhetorics, Protest, Persuasion, and Publics. It's edited by some great folks, Jonathan Alexander, Susan Jarrett, and Nancy Welsh. And I got invited to contribute to this and just a couple days ago we got the email with the final proofs, right? Just to go through it one more time, look for any proofreading stuff, and it's going to be published by University of Pittsburgh Press. It's a fantastic collection. Should be come out in the fall. I mean, I think it's slated for November. I hope they push it up earlier. It'd be awesome. But anyways, so I have a piece in there called We're Not All in This Together, A Case for Advocacy, Factionalism, and Making the Political Personal. It was just, I was so psyched. For me, is that, you know, I'm sure there's a lot of academics that will read this and will kind of like, ah, this is, you know, whatever. This is not deep scholarship or whatever like this. For me, this represents for me probably the best thing I have ever written, right? I love this piece. It's a long time coming where I could feel like, you know, I finally got something that feels 100% in my voice, right, in an academic context. That's always been one of the kind of the struggles. And I have to say, a lot of that comes from the work doing for Raging Chicken, right? The whole idea about thinking about writing for a different audience that is not just some sort of sequestered group of academics someplace in order to, you know, get published and all this stuff, but actually start writing for a broader public. And it came through in this. So I'm really psyched about that. I put a little screen grab of the first page up on my Instagram and on our Facebook page and things like this. So I'm just psyched. So just happy about that. Just wanted to share. But yeah, so I am back from vacation, and I did get a chance to sample some good beers. Cape May Brewing and Double Nickel Brewing. I had never heard of Double Nickel Brewing. Have you heard of them before, Sean?
I have not.
They're actually kind of, came across them in this kind of little liquor store, you know, beer store down in New Jersey. And I said, oh, let me try this stuff up. And they had some good stuff. I had they've got a Belgian ale, had that, and had, I think the Vienna style lager, which was pretty good. Also, you know, I go down to Cape May Brewing. Every time I down there, I grab something from Cape May Brewing, and they've got this one called Coastal Evacuation. Highly recommended. It was a good drinking beer. I'll tell you, you know, right off the bat is that there's something about them, you know, being kind of close to the shore, that they're kind of producing beers for the shore, and that's the kind of beers that they are, right? They're not some of the kind of real heavy beers that you're going to get a lot of the Pennsylvania stuff. A lot of the beer that I like from Free Will and things like this, it's not going to come off that kind of like shocking. They're much more sessionable kind of ales, very kind of drinkable, some good stuff. So that was kind of cool. So Cape May Brewing, Double Nickel Brewing. If you get a chance, check out Double Nickel. I think it's worth a shot, especially if you're looking for, you know, backyard barbecue and that kind of stuff. And if you're looking for a sample of something from Cape May Brewing, definitely I would recommend the Coastal Evacuation was my number one. So,
have you been to Bound Beverage yet on 611?
Have not. Oh, yes, I have. Yes, I have. Yeah.
So have you been there since they redid the laws? You can buy six packs of singles now in there?
No, I have not.
Recommend going in there.
Okay.
Half the store is six pack and singles and four packs and
really?
Stuff like that. Yes.
It's been a long time since I've been in there. I probably haven't been there since last summer.
Yeah. No, it's definitely worth looking into.
All right, man.
Yeah. I was there last time I was home. Picked up some sour bottles.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, there's stuff in there, sour bottles that don't move at all, and they discount them for $7.50 a bottle. Ooh. From Paradox and stuff like that. Yeah,
nice.
You can find some good deals in there.
All right. Yeah. All right. Thanks for the tip, man. I appreciate it.
Yeah.
Yeah, cool. So anything else going on? Anything else for the rest of the week? Fun stuff?
No, I'm going to be home for the next few days, helping out my sister, watch my niece, and I'll be going to Marciano's on Thursday. Have you ever heard of Marciano's before or no?
No.
Marciano's an Italian bakery, sort of like in Manayunk. Mm-hmm. And all they make is tomato pie and strombolis.
Oh, man.
So, my mom's leaving me some money, driving to Manayunk tomorrow morning, get me some tomato pie. And one does not simply eat tomato pie. Mm-hmm. Feasting on tomato pie is an all-day event. you just want to sit there and have a couple slices of it, because it's just yeah.
Man, I wish I had this information before. We were down in Philly, or when we were coming back from kind of driving past Philly, really, coming back from the shore, and there was all sorts of backup traffic. Surprise, surprise! Right on 76, and so we got off and kind of went through Manayunk. Man, had I known, I would have said my kids had to go to the bathroom too. I was like, hey, look, there's a little bakery over here. It's in tomato pie. So,
yeah, I think they're closed Sundays and Mondays.
Oh, so I wouldn't be able to get in.
Yeah, and
so.
It's the type of place, once they're sold out, they're done for the day.
They're done for the day, yeah. That's what you
so
want.
So they're closed by 1 o'clock in the afternoon, pretty much.
Oh, man, that's awesome. Yeah. Well, cool, man. Well, I hope you, enjoy the time with the little one. Soak it up, man, soak it up.
Yeah, I'll be having some fun this weekend.
Yeah, you're going to be Uncle Sean.
I advise people to look at my Twitter account.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Stay tuned, everybody. Stay tuned to Twitter. Oh, cool. All right, man. Anything else for the good of the order?
That's it.
All right, man. Well, This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. I want to remind you one more time, if you can, if you want to support progressive media right here, homegrown in Pennsylvania, go to patreon.com/rcpress and become a member today for as little as $5 a month. We'll be back next week. And guess what next week is, folks? Episode 100.
Woo!
See ya!
I wanted to know, why did you lie about campaigning with the Rod of Iron Ministries?
The
Rod of Iron Ministries?
Yes.
The Moon family?
I campaigned
at the family business of?
I went to visit a business in Pike County. It was a meet and greet event, and I believe there were 100 people there. I did not campaign with them. I went to meet other people, and I left. I didn't do an interview.
They introduced you at the event, a cult leader.
Well, he's the owner of the business.